Thanks for tuning in to the Fairhaven Church Sermons Podcast. My name is Brandon Tates, and I'm the AVL Director here at Fairhaven, and we're so glad you've decided to join us. Fairhaven is a part of Harbor Churches, a multi-site church located in West Michigan, and we exist to help people find their way back to God. We hope this message helps you to take your next step in your faith journey. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Fairhaven. My name's Jeremy. I'm one of the pastors here. And this morning, we're going to jump back into a series that we started a few weeks ago, right after Easter Sunday. Because about a month ago, we gathered together on Easter Sunday to celebrate that the grave was empty. The tomb is empty. Jesus has risen. He's alive and well. And we celebrated Easter. And then we know after Easter, after Jesus rose from the dead, Jesus was going to have some encounters with some of the disciples, with the crowds. Jesus was going to give himself to some things after his resurrection. We know that about 50 days after Jesus rises, 50 days after Easter, there's another day that gets celebrated often in the church. It's a day that we know as Pentecost. So Easter, Jesus rises from the dead. 50 days later, we have Pentecost, where God is going to send the Holy Spirit into the world. And in between, Jesus has some work to do. That after he rises, Jesus is going to ascend. He's going to ascend. He's going to sit at the right hand of God 50 days after Easter, Holy Spirit comes. But in that time, Jesus is giving himself to some things. Because he's got some disciples that he needs to have some conversations with. He has some people that he needs to get back into the mission. And so what we're looking at in this series is, what did Jesus give himself to in that time? Jesus knew his time left was limited. He's going to be ascending. Who does he go to? What are the conversations he has? What are some of the things that happen? So we're looking at those stories, and today we're going to do that. We're going to look at a story. It's actually kind of the ending of the story we looked at last week. But today, we're going to do kind of more than just look at a story. Today, I want us to look at a question. It's a question that first is asked by a guy by the name of Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. But Peter's not the only person who's asked the question. I've asked this question. You've asked this question. My guess is it's a question that some of us might be asking even right now. It's a question that some of us, we've asked so often that we're almost unaware of the fact that we even still ask the question. It's a question that for some of us, we'll get in our cars after church and we'll drive home, and some of us will ask the question on the way home. For some of us, we'll pull up our phones this afternoon and you'll start scrolling and you'll find yourself asking the question. It's a question you've asked. It's a question I've asked. It's a question some of us are asking right now. Some of us will ask today. I want to make a bold statement about the question. This question has the ability to steal your joy, to keep you off mission, and I believe this question could be ruining your life. Bold claim. Can we agree it's a bold claim? I'm going to make this claim this morning. So what is the question? Well, the question comes out of a story. And so in order to see the question, we need to start by diving into the story. So if you want to follow along, we'll be in John chapter 21 this morning. If you've been paying attention over the last few weeks, you'll notice we've kind of been methodically working through the end of the book of John. A few weeks ago, kind of that first Sunday after Easter, we looked at a story of how Jesus had risen, but he hadn't encountered his disciples yet. And so a few weeks ago, we looked at the story about how the disciples were terrified. They just saw what happened to Jesus. What would now happen to them? They were his followers. They had given himself to the same mission. If they killed him, what are they going to do with them? And so we looked at the disciples. They had locked themselves into a room. And to the disciples locked into a room, Jesus shows up. And he shows himself to them and shows them it is him. He is risen. He is alive. He's really there. A few weeks ago, We then looked at the story because we know at that first meeting, one of the disciples wasn't there. It was all of them but one, a guy by the name of Thomas. A guy by the name of Thomas was not present at that first meeting. And Thomas, as you could expect, had a hard time wrapping his mind around the fact that Jesus, somebody who he literally just saw crucified, he saw executed, he saw Jesus, like he saw him buried. Peter, or Thomas, had a hard time wrapping his mind around the fact that one that he knew was killed was now risen and around. And so we looked at the story of Jesus showing up again to Thomas. Look at me, it's me, I'm here. Then last week, we looked at the story of Jesus doing some really important work, this really intimate story of Jesus meeting with one of his disciples, a guy by the name of Peter. Because Peter, we looked at, in those moments leading up to Jesus' crucifixion, Peter, not once, not twice, but three times, Peter, a disciple of Jesus, somebody who had given his life, who had walked away from everything. When Jesus first showed up and said, Peter, drop the nets and follow, Peter did it. He left his life. He gave his life to following Jesus. Not once, not twice, three times in the moments just before Jesus is crucified, Peter will say, I have no idea who that man is. I am not one of them. I do not know him. I have no idea who he is. Peter, we looked at last week, he realizes what he's done. Peter feels like this failure. Peter, in a lot of ways, it looks as though in the story as though Peter discounts himself. He believes that what he's done has actually disqualified himself. He said yes to following, but he's proven not once, not twice, three times. He has said he has no idea who his rabbi is. And so Peter almost feels disqualified, like he's no longer fit to be a disciple. And so Peter, we see, goes back to doing what he did before. He's now on the lake fishing. If you have ever wondered, what do you do with your failures? If you look at your life and you wrestle with the things where you've done something you shouldn't have, where you've messed up, if you've ever wondered, do my failures make me a failure? A shameless plug, you should go back and listen to last week. Because last week is this really incredible story of Jesus meeting Peter right where he's at, in the midst of the struggling, in the midst of the questions Peter's asking, letting Peter know your failures, what you did, does not disqualify you. It does not disqualify you. You are not a failure. Peter, put down the nets again and follow. Because last week we looked at one of the things we said could have kept Peter from living into the mission is Peter feeling like he'd failed. Like his failures somehow got in the way. His failures disqualified himself. He now has to do something else. But I want to make the argument this morning that there's something else in Peter that also threatens to keep him off mission. And in order to see that, we almost need to kind of go back and reread some of what we looked at last week, because the bulk of what we're going to look at today is how John ends the story. Because this story is really kind of the very last thing John shares in his entire gospel, his entire account of the life of Jesus. John ends with this story. So if we start again in 15, it says this: when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Jesus, on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus first had his encounter with Peter, where Jesus first called Peter to put down the nets and to follow, now again, in the wake of Peter's denial, Jesus is there. Peter is there. Jesus is telling him, he knows Peter's denied him three times. So three times, Jesus says, "Peter, I need you to get back into the mission. Do you love me?" "Yes." "Get back into the mission. Drop the nets again and follow." And then there's that last piece, kind of that goofy, like, when you were young, you dressed yourself. When you're older, somebody else. John recognizes Jesus in this is telling Peter how his life is going to end. That we know what Peter doesn't at this point. We know from church history that eventually Peter's going to get it right. That first time, Peter denies Jesus, but there is going to come a time in Peter's life when he is again going to be placed in front of some rulers. He is again going to have the option. I either say yes, and I stay faithful, I stay true, I stay committed to Jesus, and it is going to cost me my life, or I can again deny. And what we know in church history is Peter's going to do it. Peter will give his life for the mission. We actually know, it's not in the scriptures, but we know from church history that Peter ends up being, they decide they're going to execute Peter. Peter will actually say, "Crucifixion? Peter said, I am not worthy of dying the same way my rabbi did." So we know from church history that Peter actually requests to be crucified upside down because he didn't even count himself worthy to die the same death as his rabbi. Jesus knows that Peter is going to be all in. Peter's going to be committed to the mission. Jesus tells Peter, again, follow, drop the nets, follow me, give yourself to it. Jesus knows he's going to do it. I have to wonder as I'm reading the story, how does Peter respond? Peter, thinking he's been disqualified, thinking he did the worst thing imaginable. He denied his rabbi. How does Peter respond when Jesus says, "You are not disqualified. Come back in. Commit yourself again to the mission." How might Peter respond? Well, in my head, I think, well, maybe Peter in this moment breaks down because he realizes what we talked about last week, that his failing did not make him a failure, that there is still a purpose for his life, that Jesus still has his same call on him. Maybe Peter breaks down and says, "Jesus, I won't do it again. What I did, I am all in." Maybe Peter doubles down on the mission, right? Like, "I know I said that I was going to follow you that time. I messed up. I'm all in this time." Maybe he doubles down. What I find fascinating in the story is what actually happens next. What actually happens next? We read it in the very next verse, in 20. It says, "Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them." This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" Now, a quick pause. John writes this gospel. In John's world, you don't identify yourself as the author. You kind of like, it was more common to identify yourself in these weird like third party terms, right? So when John is identifying himself in the scriptures, John is always the one who ran faster. He's the one who got there first. He's the one Jesus loves. And so John is now identifying that he is now showing up. So again, put yourself in the story, shore of the Sea of Galilee, Jesus meeting Peter in the midst of Peter's feeling like he's failed, he's been disqualified, Jesus saying, "You are not a failure. Drop the nets again, follow." Peter looks up and sees John, and then Peter says this. And when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him? What about him?" Jesus, standing before Peter, says, "Peter, drop the nets, follow." And instead of Peter saying, okay, I'm in, let's go. Jesus saying, you're going to give your life. Peter, instead of doubling down, instead of going forward, Peter says, okay, but the whole way I'm going to lose my life thing doesn't, what about John? What's going to happen to him? That instead of focusing on the calling that Jesus is placing on Peter, Peter is concerned about what Jesus has in store for John. The question Peter asks, I want to kind of broaden it, is simply the question, what about them? It's a question of comparison. Jesus says, this is what is for you. This is the calling I'm placing on your life. And instead of stepping into it, the first thing Peter says is, what about them? The question, what about them, is that question about how do we compare to those around us? Peter wondering how he compares to John. And I want to make the argument that this question, what about them, the comparison question, is something that could be stealing our joy, that could be keeping us off from the mission and ruining our life. And to actually try to make my point, I need a few examples. Some of you have been wondering what this is for, right? I need a few participants. I know that a lot of you have been sitting here for weeks wondering, how do I get myself on that stage, right? I'm going to disappoint all of you adults in the room. I'm looking for maybe middle school, high school kids. I'll take one of the Tates. You can come forward. Let's take one of the Tids. All right, rock, paper, scissors for it. All right. Oh, you came straight up. All right, well done. Well done. That's legit. All right, I need one more. Who do I got? Oh, did I see on Facebook it's your birthday today? Yeah. Oh, can we say happy birthday to Hayden? Awesome. All right. Okay. Come up, stand behind a bowl. All right, go that one. Okay. So I didn't even have to bribe them. First service, like, I asked people for volunteers and everybody just like stared at me like, no. And then I told them there was candy involved. So, you know. So what I want you to do, you have a bowl in front of you covered by a towel. What I want you to do, don't let anybody else see what's in, but go ahead and peek under the towel at what's in your bowl. Okay. Are we happy about what's in our bowl? Are we excited about what's in our bowl? Yeah? All three of us, we're excited about what's in our bowl. Okay, all right. Let's start with Isaac. Isaac, will you show everybody what's in your bowl? All right, just one? Two bags of Skittles. Okay, we all love Skittles, right? No? Oh, we had this conversation pre-service. Like, I grabbed Skittles. I think Skittles are like one of the most universally loved candies. Am I wrong? I love them. It's like Skittles or Sour Patch Kids. I love them. But okay, so two bags of Skittles. Hayden, what do we got? Two bags of Skittles, the same thing. Ollie, what do we got in yours? A 3-pound monster, super expensive. Skittles are not cheap. Bag of Skittles. Okay, so question, Isaac, Hayden. Oh, no, those are yours. So you get to take those. Happy birthday. But question for you. When you first saw what was in your bowl, you were super excited. What did you do when Ollie pulled a 3-pound bag out of your bowl? You wanted it, right? Will you thank our volunteers? They're yours. Take them. Yeah. Yeah, it's yours. Take it. Absolutely. Okay. So, and I got through that twice without making anybody cry, so winning. But so, when we looked in our bowl, when all we saw what was in our bowl, we were excited, right? We liked what was in our bowl. We were excited about what was in our bowl. The moment we were no longer excited or happy about or wanting what was in our bowl is when we stopped looking at what was in ours, but we started looking at what was in theirs, right? The moment we stopped looking at what was in ours and started looking at what was in theirs, we then said, this isn't, I wish mine was more like that. I wish what I had was more like what they had. Jesus standing before Peter, give yourself, drop the nets again. Get back into the mission. This is what it's going to look like for you. And Peter's first response is, okay, but I might like this one better. What about that? What about theirs? What about John? And the question, what about them? I see what I have, but if I look at what they have, the comparison question, the what about them, my first point is I think it can be stealing you of your joy. But I don't think I even have to convince you of this. I think you already know that. I think you know it because you know it every time. It's when you open up your social media this afternoon, right? You open your phone, you start scrolling social media, and you see the picture. You know the picture. It's the family who are like bronzed from head to toe, right? And they're standing on a beach in some place that you know you would have to win the lottery in order to go to, all right? And maybe the worst thing about the photo is their kids are all hugging and they look like they enjoy it. Right? And you're seeing the picture, scrolling your phone, sitting in the chilly, rainy afternoon in Michigan, and your kids are downstairs and they're all screaming mom, right? And you find yourself as you're scrolling going, part of me wishes mine was more like theirs. You know it every time, you've got the friend, you know the friend. It's the friend, you go for dinner and you order a salad. And if you're honest, you're only planning to eat like half of it. And the friend, they order the burger, the fries, and the drink that is like triple the calories you will eat all day, right? And the whole time you're picking at your salad is they're smashing a burger and they're talking about how they just can't keep any weight on, right? And you find yourself like, why can't I be more like that? What about them? That so often we find our time not looking at what's in our bowl, at the calling that God has placed on us, on where we are. We find so much of our time we spend looking into somebody else's, wishing that ours was more like theirs, or we might have what they have. And then I think comparison, I think this whole idea, we end up playing a game with it. We end up playing a game. So if I go to the next picture, if we look at our bowl, we look at what we have, right? We look at who we are. We look at our place and we look at ours. And often when we compare ourselves, we're looking at somebody who we might say has more, right? So the next picture, we look at the bowl of the person that we would say like, they've got the fancy vacations. They've got the bigger, the whatever, the newer, bigger, whatever. And we find ourselves then comparing there going, I wish mine was more like that. And then there's a game that we'll sometimes play. Because in the midst of this, we'll tell ourselves, okay, but I shouldn't feel bad because mine is smaller than theirs. And so what we end up doing is we start playing the game on itself, where we then start looking to the opposite bowl, saying, okay, but I should feel better about what's in mine because at least mine is bigger than what's in theirs. And I would say, so we end up looking, I don't have this, but I have more than, and so I should be content. I should be happy. I should be grateful. I should be all of these things. And the whole time we are trying to play the game on top of itself, and the reality is it's never going to work. That playing the game, what about them, will never leave us grateful, will never leave us content, will never leave us satisfied. It'll leave us continuing to play the game. And then some of us, we start playing the questions, the if-only questions. You know the if-only questions, where you look at your bowl and you say, okay, if only... Like, if only I would have gotten the promotion, or if only I would have gone to a different college, or if only I would have tried a different major, or if only that thing didn't happen to me, or if only this would have gone different, if only something else would have, if only, then I would be happy, then I would be content, then I would be grateful. But the if only game is only ever going to rob us of our joy. And the reality too is that this whole game is also based on a lot of false assumptions, right? Because you have what's yours, you have what's in your bowl, who you are, what God has called you to be, where God has you. And the reality is too often we look at somebody else's and say, I wish mine was more like that. Because our assumption is that theirs must be a whole lot better. Right? Because if mine was like theirs, then I would be happy. In the story, right? Jesus tells Peter, drop the nets, come follow, give your life again, recommit yourself to the mission. And Peter sees the end part. You're going to give your life for this. And Peter goes, oh, but what about John's? Baked into it is almost this assumption that, oh, John's is probably going to go a whole lot better. right? Peter doesn't know how John's story is going to end. Sure, John's not going to be crucified upside down, but we know from church history, we know from the scriptures even, that John is going to end up exiled. He's going to spend a good chunk of his life alone on this island out in the middle of the Mediterranean. The assumption, though, is that if I had this, then I'd be happy. Then I'd be content. This would be enough. But the reality is the people who have this bowl are probably also looking at another one, right? The game will never work. What the game will do is it will steal you of your joy. And I want to argue that the game will also keep you off from the mission. It could keep you focused on all of the wrong things. Instead of Peter hearing Jesus call to drop the nets again and follow, Peter first has to work this thing out within himself. Sometimes this game can actually make us give ourselves to the wrong things. And when I think of this, I think of a story. It's where this happened to me, where the comparison game, where the what about them question, where the if only that bowl looked more, my bowl looked more like that one. I can't help but think to a time this happened to me, even this past Christmas. So this past Christmas, we've got, my family has I've come to love it, our Christmas tradition, like our Christmas routine. And it's gotten a whole lot more fun to me as my kids got a little bit older, because when my kids were younger and my wife Jenna and our three kids, we would do Christmas early on, like when the kids are young, you're just trying to feed them something they will eat, right? Because like what they eat today was different than what they eat yesterday, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. So like chicken nuggets for Christmas, sure. But as my kids got older, as they've gotten older, we've recognized that like they are now enjoying a lot of the things that we enjoy. And so we have this tradition. It's usually like birthdays and holidays, especially around Christmas. We end up, there's a local sushi place that makes this giant sushi platter for Christmas. It's, anybody like sushi? I love sushi. Our family, we've come to really enjoy it. And so our Christmas tradition, we gather together, we get this giant sushi platter, and we crush it, right? There's nothing left. Like, we're licking the wasabi off it. It's amazing. But so we crush this giant sushi platter, and then after we eat, then we do presents. And so we all get together, and we open presents. And this past year, so just a few months ago, we then asked the question. We had a little extra time at night. So we're like, what do we want to do? Like, we've got some time left. What do we want to do? And I don't know who came up with the idea, but the idea came up that we were going to drive around and look at Christmas lights. Anybody ever, like, you drive around and look at Christmas lights, like old people? Joking. But you drive around and look at Christmas. I love Christmas lights. I love Christmas. I'm the psycho who puts his Christmas tree up in October. I love it. I love the way Christmas lights like light up and out, like light up a house, and it gives this twinkle, this magic in the air. I love it. And so we decide this Christmas party to pack into a car, drive around, and look at Christmas lights on houses. And that's how it started. And so we get in the car and ask, where are we going to go? And there's a neighborhood not far from us. It's like all these like really big, really new houses. And so the question, like, oh, I wonder what those look like. So we started driving, and the drive started, we're looking at all of the Christmas lights in this neighborhood. But then I wasn't aware of it when it started, but I realized I started asking the question, the what about them? That I found myself, again, unknowing at first, but then recognizing it, that I found that I was no longer looking at the lights on the houses. I was looking at the houses behind the lights and asking the question, man, I wish mine looked more like that, right? I wish what they was more. And if I'm honest, I'm driving around at our family Christmas, after our family Christmas party, and I'm asking the question that instead of doubling down on this time that I have with my family, with my wife and my kids, instead of being grateful for all of the things that God has given me, for Christmas itself, right? That God came into the world in Jesus, for the time that I have with my wife and my kids, with just our family, driving around, spending time together. And in my head, I was somewhere else because I got caught up in the question. The reality is that the question, the what about them, the if only my, if only can keep us off mission because it makes us become focused, preoccupied on the wrong things, even in times when the right things are right in front of us. The question, what about them? The comparison trap can steal us of our joy. It can keep us off mission, and I think it can ruin our lives. So if that's the problem, if the problem is the question, what about them, the comparison game, then what is the answer? What is the antidote? If there's a problem, there's an antidote. I think he leans into the answer in how Jesus responds to Peter. We find it actually in the very next verse. It says this, Jesus answered, "If I want John to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Notice, does Jesus answer the question? Does Jesus like enter in, like, Peter, so you think John's story is going to be great. Well, John's also going to face some trials. John's actually going to, does Jesus answer Peter? No. What Jesus does is simply says, okay, if the problem is the question that Peter asked, the what about them, what about him, what about John, the answer is the answer Jesus gives, which is the question, what is that to you? Peter, I am calling you to lay down your nets, to once again step into the mission, to recommit, to don't disqualify yourself. I have not disqualified you. Peter, step back in. What I'm calling John to, that's for John. It's John's job to be faithful for what I'm calling him to do with who I've called him to be. Peter, what I need you to do is focus on who I've called you to be and what I am calling you into. Trust that John will be faithful for John. You be faithful for you. What is it to you what I've called John to? And that last piece, that you must follow me. Peter, The answer is to stop looking in somebody else's. The answer is to focus on who I've called you to be. The answer is to focus on what I've called you to do, where I've called you to go, what I've called you to, the journey I have placed in front of you. Peter, stay focused on yours. Keep your eyes out of there, stay focused on yours, and step back into the mission. Because the reality is what Jesus says is, Peter, I've not called you to be John, right? I've not called John to be you. I've not called you to be John. I've called you to be you, and I've called you to do what I'm calling you into. It reminds me of a story. It's a story about a rabbi, a guy by the name of Zusia. And Zusia lived after the time of Jesus. And Zusia was a rabbi who had disciples. And his disciples, like any disciple, you want to give yourself to learning the way of your rabbi. You want to know what they know. You want to do what they do. You want to live like they live. And so you don't want to miss anything. You want to be there for all of it. And so the story goes that Zusia was nearing the end of his life. He's entering the final days. And so his rabbis, they want to know, how does Zusia even engage this? How does he face the last moments, the last days, the last hours of his life? So his disciples are right there. And the story goes that as they're gathered together in some of those last moments of Zusia's life, Zusia starts weeping. And his disciples ask him the question, like, Rabbi, why are you crying? And Zusia responds, he says, well, in the age to come, when I pass from this life and enter into the next, when I stand before God, I know he's not going to ask me, Zusia, why were you not more like Abraham? Or Zusia, why were you not more like Moses? Zusia said, if God were to ask me those questions, I know how I would answer, because God did not make me to be Abraham. He did not make me to be Moses. But he said, what will I answer when God asks Zusia, why were you not more like Zusia? Zusia, I called you to be you. I have gifted you the way I've gifted you. You are to be you. How much of your time have you spent looking into somebody else's going, if only I was more like that, if only I could have been more like that, if only I could, and instead of entering into the mission that I have called you to, you try to do something else. In what ways am I, trying to be something other than the best version of me who is chasing after the way of Jesus in the world, with who God has called me to be, with what God has placed, with where God has placed me, with what's in front of me? The call, I think the call is to stop playing the game, right? To stop looking in theirs, to stop asking the question, what about them, if only whatever? To maybe hear that question that Jesus offered in response. What is that to you? What is that? What is theirs is theirs. I've called them to do for the... What is that to you? What does it look like instead for you? With who God has created you to be? With where you are? With the resources and the gifts and the talents and the influence that you have to be the best version of you who is being faithful to and chasing after what God has in front of you? That it's when we do that, when we turn our attention towards that, I think on the one hand, we can be grateful for everything that God has for us, for who God has called you to be, for all the things that God has given. And it allows us to step into that life, that mission, that calling that God has on each and every one of us.
Thanks for listening. As you are tuning in, our hope is that you were encouraged and inspired to take the next step in your faith journey. For service times and for more information about how you can become a part of Fairhaven, you can visit us at fhchurch.org. Have a great week.